Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Pat Prescott from The Morning Show. Every year during the month of February, we pay tribute to individuals who are making waves in Southern California, creating living history, as it were, who are doing the things that they were born to do and really affecting other people's lives when they do it. That makes the next young lady whose voice you will hear a very good example of what we're talking about. She is Ozzie B. Gonzaga. She has a long history of serving the community here in Southern California, involved with the police department, has done some incredible things, which we will talk about, and we're going to trace her life's journey. First of all, Ozzie, congratulations, and thank you so much for agreeing to sit down and talk to us about
your
story.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, let's go back to the beginning. Now, I understand you grew up in the South, as many of us who live in this part of the country did. Tell us a little bit about what that was like and about your family, especially your parents, your grandparents.
Yes, I was raised in Monroe, Louisiana with four sisters, five girls in my family. And we lived there until we came here in 44.
And about how old were you then?
I was 18 then.
Okay, so you had finished the earlier school years.
Yes,
then.
Yes.
What was that transition like, moving from the South to Southern California?
It was different. It wasn't what I expected it to be, but it was a change of pace. I guess I expected more than I actually found.
Tell me a little bit about your parents. What kind of work did they do? And about how you were raised, because very often, you know, those people, our parents and grandparents, are the ones who have the biggest impact on us, especially in our earlier years, in terms of what kind of goals we set, how we think about education, all of those kind of things.
Well, my mom and dad were the greatest. Of course, it was my mom and dad, but my father was a very hard worker, and my mom was a housewife. She stayed home and raised the five girls. She wanted a boy. I was the last one. She told my father, "I hope this is a boy because this is the last chance." I grew up there, and my two sisters moved to Los Angeles, and I came out to visit them when I was like 17. My father had paid for his property there, and when he went to get his deed, they told him he couldn't get his deed. "We keep the deed. You can get a copy." And it made him so angry, he called me and he said, "Go and find a place to buy." He said, "If I can pay for my property and I can't keep my deed, I don't need to be here."
Exactly.
So that's when he decided to move to Los Angeles in 1944.
Now, I know that for a lot of us growing up during those years, that one of the primary focuses from our parents and grandparents for us was education. Was that the case in your life as well?
It was. It was. We all wanted an education, but my mother was very ill. She was diabetic. There was two hospitals in Monroe. One was St. Francis and one was a county hospital. And when my mother became ill, it was so expensive at the hospitals that two of my sisters, we all left school, left school and started working because we were determined she wouldn't go into a county hospital. And my mother died very young. She died at 49.
Wow.
After she was here 2 years, she passed away.
So talk about some of that early work, especially after you came here to Southern California, and what it was like being in L.A. during that time. I understand that you were you often frequented Central Avenue.
Yes.
This is one of your spots, and, you know, they've got the Central Avenue Jazz Festival that we go to now, and I understand that the roots are really deep there for music and culture in that particular area in Southern
Absolutely.
California.
When I first came here, the Alabama Club was there, and most of the entertainers, Nat King Cole, all of the people who really became big, performed there. And my sister was here, and she knew the manager of the Alabama. So I started working as a waitress at the Alabama. And that's when I met Tom Bradley.
You met a bunch of entertainers, I would imagine.
Oh, yes, a lot of Cesar Romero and all of them. I was a waitress, and they wouldn't have anybody wait on them but me. So I worked there, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
And what did your dad think about you working here?
My mother and dad always taught us to be independent. If it's something we wanted to do, they would support us unless it was something wrong.
So you met Tom Bradley there. Tom Bradley later on will become a very important part of your story. But I know that even prior to meeting Tom Bradley, there was something tugging your heart about the community and about being of service to people. Talk about how you decided that you wanted to do something that would help others.
Well, after my family moved here, I was working, but I still did volunteer work because I was always taught that if you want changes, if you're not willing to work for it, then you don't have a right to complain about it. So I started doing volunteer work. I volunteered 10 years with the Bureau of Consumer Affairs. It was the best education I could have because it taught me about how to fight when there was injustices done. And even in the community, companies would come in and do things. And so working with the Bureau of Consumer Affairs was quite an education. And I worked for them 10 years.
And then after that, what happened?
After that, I was really angry with the police. I was very angry with them. And my mother always said, if you don't like something and you're angry about it, what are you willing to do about it? And if you said nothing, she said, then you don't have a right to complain. So I was so angry that I decided I was going to find a way to work to change it. And I didn't know how to do anything. So I decided I would volunteer at the station. So I volunteered at the station, and I was learning everything I could about how to fight injustices. And so I worked with them, and they welcomed me.
What were some of the things that were making you angry with the police department?
Well, it was the disrespect. They'd come into the minority community, and it was an attitude of they didn't have to respect you. It didn't matter what kind of citizen you were. If you lived in a certain area, they felt they had a right to just disrespect you and do whatever they felt. And I felt that was wrong. I felt it was absolutely wrong.
So now when you went to start working as a volunteer with them, then you also had access to be able to say something about some of these things. And also you had the opportunity to get to meet some of the people who were involved there and to find out who was like-minded, who had the same ideas as you. Describe that whole experience and what that period was like as you became someone who, as a community advocate, also began to have some influence on the people within the department.
Well, I need to go back a little bit. I was married to a police officer who happened to be white. And at that time, in 48, it wasn't supposed to happen. So they were absolutely vindictive. They went after him. They fired him and literally destroyed him. He died very young because of it. And I was so angry that I felt, I'm going to find a way to fight them. And that's when I started really looking into how I could fight them. And I did. For years, I worked with them. And when the McCone Commission came in after the Watts riot, I was called to testify. And I told them, I don't want to testify. They said, we don't care, we'll subpoena you. You've been working with the police and we will subpoena you. So I went in to testify. And when I walked in, on the side of the door was a box. And they asked me, what did LAPD, what did it represent to me? What does it mean to you? I said, well, they're supposed to protect and serve. That's not what they do, but that's what they... He said, no, don't tell me. Write it and put it in the suggestion box. So I wrote it and put it in the suggestion box. And then I went in to testify. And they were asking me, why did I feel the black community and the police department had such a hate relationship? And I said, because of the attitude of your officers. I said, they come in my community, and it doesn't matter whether I'm a saint or not. They treat everybody as if they're drug dealers or bank robbers. How would you feel? So They didn't answer, but they just kind of looked at each other. And I said, and there's no minorities who serve in any capacity to hire a police officer. So as long as you have constables hiring constables, that's the attitude you're going to have. So they didn't say too much. They just kind of looked at me. But so when I left and I got home, Tom Bradley called me because he was my big brother. And he was a city councilman at that time. And he asked me, how did it go today? And I said, well, it went okay, and I told him what had happened and what I said. And he said, I'm going to put that down. I'm going to make a record of that. When I said it was to protect and serve, he said, I'm going to make a record of that. So he did. Later, I was honored by the city, and he had a proclamation done, and it was signed by three city councilmen that I had turned in the motto to protect and serve. So after about 6 months of testifying at the McCone Commission, I was called and I was asked, would I be willing to serve on the oral board? And the oral board, as you know, is the first is a written test and the next is you appear before the oral board. And if you don't pass the oral board, then they don't get on. So I served 25 years on that oral board. First minority to serve on that oral board.
And also, to talk about, you mentioned to protect and serve, and I know that you were the person who came up with that motto. Yes. We see it on all the law enforcement vehicles and everywhere else, too. How does it feel today when you see a police car go past you and you see that motto that you created that really is... It's the true mission of law enforcement everywhere, or should be the true mission of law enforcement everywhere. But here in Los Angeles, we actually see it. It has become a part of the lexicon of the law enforcement community. How does that make you feel?
Very humble and very grateful that at least, you know, if it did anything to change, that's all I ever wanted was to do anything I could to change the attitude and the relationship, because, you know, we all have to live in this world. We all have to live in this community. And to see police officers and citizens hating and fighting each other is so useless to me. I just wasn't raised that way. I was always raised to try to be a decent person and respect other people. And that's all I really wanted.
And, you know, it's an interesting thing, too. It seems like such a simple thing, but words have so much power. You know, the power of life and death is in the tongue. And just to be able to voice that, it becomes something that can become a goal, really, for law enforcement, you know, forever. I mean, even after all of us are gone. That's kind of significant. But that's not all that you did. You were able to really, I think, get into the hearts and minds of some of the people in the police department, because you, after that, when Mayor Bradley became the mayor, he included you as well in his plans for the department, didn't he? Tell us about that.
Well, Mayor Bradley, because I had been working with the Bureau of Consumer Affairs, I had handled three cases in Nixon Garden, where merchants had really abused people, sold them products that was just absolutely wrong. And one young lady had bought a bedroom set from a furniture company. The mattress was so cheap, it broke in the spring, cut the back of her leg, and she almost bled to death because it cut the artery in her leg. And so I was called from the people downtown and said, will you work this case? Because when they went to the store to say the mattress was, we want our money back, they said, it's yours. We don't have anything to do with. So when she called me, I said, yes, I'll work the case. So it was an old, it was a place called Times Furniture Company. Years ago, they had been there for years. So I went in to work the case. When I went in, first thing that hit me, I'm going to see the bedroom set for $89 that you have. And he made the mistake of saying, well, that's just for advertisement purposes. So he talked.
Did you know who he was talking to?
No, he didn't have any clue. Then he showed me used furniture that he was selling as new furniture. He had switch and bathe. He had all kind of violations in there. And I was recording all of them. So finally I said to him, would you give me your card with the price of that bedroom set? I want to get it for my daughter. And he wrote it down. I said, how much would the actual cost be? He said, $680. So I said, so the $89 is just for what? That's for advertisement purposes.
That's just to get you in the store.
So when he put it on the card, I walked out and I was working with the city attorney and we've got it.
That's right, because this is an illegal practice.
Yes.
Yeah.
They ended up having to close that store.
Another accomplishment.
Yes.
Well, I know you've gotten, I saw a list of some of the awards and commendations that you've received over your lifetime, and wow, it's a lot. I'm interested in what accomplishments you are really most proud of when you look at, back at all that you've done so far.
I think the thing I'm most proud of is the fact that LAPD has changed tremendously. The relationship is different. It's a whole different attitude. And that was really my concern, that it's a shame that the people that's supposed to protect us, we have such a hate relationship. And that bothered me. So I'm very grateful that there's been a lot of changes. The chief that's there now, the chief before him, Chief Beck, they really were working hard to try to change some of the things that had happened over the years.
And you know, one of the important things too about you telling your story is that very often we get so caught up in the moment. You know, people will, I mean, because there's still a lot of work to be done with law enforcement relationships with the community.
Oh, yes.
But we must never forget where we've come from.
Yes.
And how much it has improved. I mean, I think the same thing, you know, when you think about segregation and all these other things, too, that even though there's more work to be done, we have to be proud of the progress that has been made.
I meet young people now, and I try to encourage them to become involved with law enforcement, become involved in anything that they're displeased with. Get involved and see whether you can make a difference. Because just griping about it and criticizing it is not going to change it. So I still try to encourage young people, become involved with law enforcement, become involved with your community. One way or the other, you're the only one that can change it. Moving is not going to change it. We bring our kids up to think you have to live in a certain area in order to accomplish something, in order to do something. Well, where you live has nothing to do with who you are. My parents moved to Watts, California, because that was a new area that was being built. I've lived there. I still live there. Every politician that's in Los Angeles has been in my house. If he hasn't been to my house, I haven't invited him. So you know, I don't go anywhere to impress anybody. I live and I raised my children there, and I'm proud of my children. They were born and raised there. And so I've always tried to teach my children, where you live has nothing to do with who you are.
Exactly. You know, and you mentioned your kids, and you've got grandkids and great-grandkids now as well.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, what are some of the really important things that you want to impart to them? You know, if you had to write a letter to your grandkids and great-grandkids, you know, that they can read years down the road, what are some of the things you would want to say to them?
To be willing to get up and do something when you see a wrong, do something, try to correct it. You may not be able to completely correct it, but you can certainly make a difference. And I think it's so sad when children are brought up feeling they don't have a responsibility to do anything but complain. That, to me, is so useless. It's a waste of time. It doesn't change anything. But I think we have to teach our children they have a responsibility to try to make a difference. They have a responsibility if they want it to be a better world.
Well, you have done more than just say those things. You have actually lived all of this, and in the process of doing that, just made a tremendous impact on our community that will stand for years and years to come. On behalf of everybody here at The Wave and our entire Wave family, we just want to thank you for all your contributions to our community, and just to say congratulations once again for being one of our Making Waves honorees for this year for Black History Month.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Azi Gonzake. She is one of our honorees this year. Super proud of the work you've done. And thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you very much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.